Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello.
Last week, we talked about SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 9 and 10, where we said goodbye to the Tolan and had a fun adventure in the Ziggurat. And today, we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episodes 11 and 12, Desperate Measures and Wormhole Extreme! Desperate Measures premiered on September 7th, 2001, and was written by Joseph Malazzi and Paul Mully and directed by William Garrity. Wormhole Extreme premiered on September 8th, 2001. Yes, you heard that right. And was written by Brad Wright, Joseph Malazzi, and Paul Mully, and directed by Peter DeLuise. So we have politics in the first episode, and then a meta episode. Arzu, would you please summarize?
So some white men do some unethical stuff in Desperate Measures. I don't care how desperate he is, that's pretty unethical. And that's the extent of Desperate Measures, because I want to get to Wormhole Extreme, the best episode. Definitely, so far, the best episode of the season, arguably the best episode I've seen in a couple of seasons. It's so much fun.
Yep.
It's Galaxy Quest meets the Ember Island Players. It's so good.
What's so Ember good. Island Players?
It's from Avatar The Last Airbender.
I will explain. I remember that.
Do you remember when they go to the Fire Nation and they go to the theater and they're like watching a show?
Oh, that?
They're like, wait a second. It made me think of that.
Oh, I remember that. Okay. Yeah. And it's like themselves. They're watching
it's
themselves.
It's like them that they're watching it. They're like, we don't do that. I was like,
okay. I follow. Okay. Okay. So let's start with our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote. I don't care what's wrong with you. Nothing gives you the right. And your guess was Jack is speaking to another SG-1 member who is acting out, and Jack tries to get them in line, but then he gets cut off mid-sentence. And your second guess of who was talking was Hammond. Well, you were wrong. You're very wrong.
So wrong. Even the context was wrong. You know what?
It's fine. Wrong. Person's wrong.
You fine. Tell him, Sam. I don't even care. I don't even care that I was wrong.
Sam is speaking to the villain of the week, Okay, so we're starting out with Desperate Measures. We see an exchange from a Russian team to a Russian team of a Jaffa on Earth. So it's like, what? Why is there a Jaffa?
I was checking my sound settings because I'm like, I don't know why I can't hear them. then I realized it's not English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No problem.
I was like, what is wrong with this audio? I'm like, it's in Russian. Not that there's anything wrong with Russian. I just assumed it would be English.
Yeah. And so then the next scene, we have some ninjas come and kidnap Sam. Ninjas is what the guy who witnesses the the capture calls them. And yeah, my comment is, hands off my Sam. Like, how dare. She puts up a good fight, though. Like, she gets good punches and kicks, and she like yells so that people can hear her. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. So
for a second I thought she was gonna get away. Like the way she hit him pretty hard. So like I thought she was gonna be getting away, but alas, they took her away.
And so she ends up drugged in an abandoned hospital, and her multivitamin really comes in handy because apparently it makes her less susceptible to the narcotics that they're giving her to knock her out. So
it's one hell of a multivitamin,
right? It's just such a great plot device.
Oh yeah. I feel like half the reason she got it was not just for like narrative tension, but so they could like play with a character who wasn't quite at Teal'c levels of immunity, but also like not Jack and Daniel, just kind of susceptible to everything.
Yep. Yep. And so then it's like, technically, the Air Force can't get involved because it's up to the local authorities. But, like, obviously, Jack is going to do his own.
He's like, that's my wife.
Yeah. And he manages to contact Mayborn to see if Mayborn knows anything about it. And Mayborn is like, I don't know. And you may just have to consider her lost. And it's just like, Harry, 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 we were talking about my girlfriend here. Like, obviously, I'm going to find her.
I know that's how the military works, but they are so quick to write people off when they go missing. Right. They're like, well, they'll be missed. And like, you can still see them being like, no, right. I'm okay. Just give me a hand. They're like, gone too soon.
Yep.
What a tragedy.
Break out the bugle.
Like playing the whatever taps. It is. Taps. They're playing taps and like Sam's going, I'm still here.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like this episode simultaneously has a lot going on and is kind of slow because we get Mayborn, we have Simmons, we have Jack and his dress blues, we have a new Jaffa on Earth, we have Russians, we have a new villain who's like a normal guy who, well, becomes a ghoul. Well, like, there's just so much going on, but at the same time, I was just like, okay.
There was a long, it felt like there was like a long time between each significant plot beat.
Yes.
And in that time, like, nothing really happened.
Yeah.
And I'm not the type who needs something to be like happening in quotes constantly, but like nothing was happening.
Well, because it's like, if there's not action happening, then there should be some kind of character development happening. And it was more like dead time.
Like, this episode could have been an email. Like, because the Sam stuff, which we'll get into, was where the really good plot was. And, like, Jack's investigation into finding, like, where she went was a good B plot. But then when you bring in Mayborn and Simmons and the Russians and all of this other stuff really convolutes what is supposed to be your B plot.
Right.
So, like, I guess set up future arcs that it kind of, diluted the punch of... Yeah. I almost kind of wish, I mean, we'll get there, but the Gwold that pops up at the end winds up being, you know, a huge figure in Sam's plot. And I almost kind of wish that that had been played more as like villain of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reveal at the end is that he's a bigger antagonist. And oh, surprise, Mayborn's involved. And then had the politics with Mayborn and all that happen later.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I think probably what it suffers from is the fact that I think it's mostly playing a setup for a future episodes. So in 3 episodes from this, which is going to be on our next podcast episode, we have the Adrian Conrad Gwold come back with Simmons and Mayborn. And so I feel like this episode was mostly just a prequel to that one.
Yeah, but like 45 minutes of setup?
Yeah.
Which I guess is a luxury they had when they had 22 episode seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't dislike the episode. It just felt a little slower than usual.
It was boring.
You'll say it.
I mean, it was boring. I think it would have been like fine if Wormhole Extreme wasn't so much fun, because then in retrospect, it would have been more boring.
Yeah, following up with Wormhole Extreme, this one had no chance.
No, none whatsoever.
Although I guess it's better that we started with this one.
Oh, I wouldn't have retained a damn thing about this episode if I'd watched Wormhole Extreme first.
So we're getting to the point with Mayborn where, like, he's no longer the guy you hate. It's the guy that you're mildly annoyed by, because it's like he's not really a villain anymore. He's just kind of like, he's a guy who looks out for number one, and sometimes he does unethical stuff in order to, you know, get more money for himself or whatever. But he's not necessarily like a bad guy doing bad things for the sake of being bad, you know?
Yeah. He's not a villain. He's just not a nice, he's not a great guy.
Yeah. But I feel like his villainry is like almost clinical in the way that he's just like, look, I got to break into this place in order to get this information. And I need this information in order to do this other thing so that I can get some money. Like, I mean, what can you do?
It is what it is. Oh no, it sucks.
Yeah. And I mean, he seems to genuinely like kind of like sparring with Jack. And so I don't think he means any harm. Like, I think he was like genuinely concerned about Carter being kidnapped. He was like, oh yeah, I mean, that does suck. Like,
yeah, like he concerned in a poor Sam or concerned in like a should I be worried about the security breach kind of way. Maybe both.
Maybe both, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't think he lacks a conscience necessarily. It's just that he's more concerned about his own well-being than anybody else's.
Yeah, which is, makes him a realistic villain.
Yeah.
Quite the change from the immortal gods with multivitamins in their tummies.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of like, as we see more and more of Mayborn, he's becoming more likable. So, I mean, I definitely trust him more than Simmons.
Yeah. 100%. Because
it's like, Simmons is very obviously chasing power in all the wrong places, and he knows it.
Yeah, that's a little more cartoon bad guy.
Yeah. I was kind of remarking while watching Mayborn, like, break into various places. I'm like, you know, back then, breaking and entering was a lot more simple. Everything is electronic now, so you have to, like, hack into systems in order to break it anywhere. It's more complicated.
It's so cute watching, like, on this show when they want to get information. And like, this episode and the next one where there's, like, a lot of paper and mm-hmm. a paper trail and, like, manually yep. searching. It's
cute.
Nostalgic. I don't envy them. But it's nostalgic.
Yeah, I think in a couple episodes from now, we're going to see them, like, watching VHS tapes. I'm like, oh, man.
This is right around the same time. Totally different show. ER. Very grounded. But this is right around the same time. Like, there was a whole episode where the B-plot was they got a computer at the admin desk that was connected to the internet. They were like, what do we do with this?
Lots of stuff.
Like, whoa, they're like typing with one finger. I mean, they're in the military, they've had this stuff a little longer, it's not quite that weird for them, but like, it's cute to watch.
Yeah, but they still use like cassette tapes and VHS and everything.
Well, it works.
Yeah,
why do I feel like at the top, like topmost levels of security, like they're still using VHS tapes,
floppy disks,
VHS tapes? You can't hack those.
Yeah, I guess so.
They're on to us. Oh, God.
I mean, my dad never got rid of any of his floppies. He still has a bunch. Another, like, really random thing that I was noticing, because I'm weird, is that they had Sam tranquilized on this bed in the middle of, like, an abandoned room with surgical instruments that obviously were not clean. Anyway, whatever. They had put her into scrubs, not a hospital gown, and they'd also given her shoes. And I'm like, I feel like it's weird to drug somebody and keep them, like, tied down, but then also give them shoes.
That's so that Amanda Tapping could do her action scenes?
Yeah. Well, obviously I know that, but...
So she can do it without her butt hanging out.
Plot-wise, it does not make sense.
Yeah, why not just do grippy socks?
Yeah. And even the shoes that they gave her, they're kind of like off-brand Converse. And her footsteps were very loud later on in the episode. And I was like, I don't think those shoes would make that much noise.
They don't make a lot of noisier than you think. Converse?
Yeah.
Yeah, they make more noise than you'd think.
Oh. I don't know. It just sounded like she had a heavier shoe on.
The sole is quite thick, so.
Hmm. But this didn't look like real Converse, though.
No, I know that type of shoe.
Okay.
I was minded.
And we also got a new pronunciation of Gwold.
I did clock that. That and something else. He said really weird.
There was something else he said weird. What was that?
Oh, it was in the other... Jaffa? It was Jaffa, but they said it weird.
Well, and people, like, are always saying
like
that
a wrong. Jaffa, and I'm like, that's new.
That's not what that is.
That's not... That's something else. So I don't know what that is, but that's not it.
So this is now our seventh pronunciation of Gwold.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Keeping a list. So, in any case... Essentially, the plot of this episode is that Russians, when they had their Stargate program, they actually captured a Jaffa and brought him back to Earth. And of course, they didn't like write it down anywhere. So nobody at the SJC knew about it. And the symbiote in this Jaffa became mature. So it needs a host. And this tech guy, Adrian Conrad, who's dying of some obscure disease, wanted the symbiote to heal his disease, and they were wanting to study Sam in order to find out how to later get rid of the symbiote after it had healed Adrian Conrad. And so they obviously weren't able to do the studying that they needed to do, and so they had to do the implantation into Conrad before they were really ready to. And it was instantaneous. Like, they put the symbiote in, and within 3 seconds, it was awake and feeling great. And I'm like, I mean, I understand that they can heal the human host, but it was a pretty debilitating disease. So, like, I feel like it would take a few hours at least.
Yeah, because disease has, like, a physical toll.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, things aren't functioning properly. Like, the lack of proper function has damaged existing, yeah, like organs and systems. Like, you need more than 3 seconds.
Yeah, so I was like,
maybe he had wasted so much time doing other stuff. Yeah. The healing process could have taken a little while. He could have been like, oh, I already feel the improvements, and then like another scene somewhere else, and they come back, he's like, I feel so much better. Like, I would buy that.
Yeah
waiting to get to Wormhole Extreme, they were like sleepwalking through this one.
Yeah, I mean, he does, the Ghoul does fake them out initially, but he pretty quickly just like breaks his restraints and kills everybody that's in his way, basically.
As you do.
Yeah. And I did finally hear the Canadian sorry.
Yeah.
That was a very obvious one. So like, okay, I heard that one.
They're all obvious to me. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, you guys. So sorry.
I don't know if the character Adrian Conrad is supposed to be Canadian or not, but the actor sure is.
I don't think so.
I mean, he could be. He didn't say specifically. He just said he was a tech bro.
That's true. He could be, but like realistically, probably American. But with his super Canadian accent, eh? He's so sorry about the inconvenience, eh? Just need to cut you up there a little. That's a little more Fargo than Canadian. It's the same thing. It's the same accent. Don't come at me. You know I'm right.
You're allowed to make fun of the
accent. I'm allowed to say that.
Canadian. Yeah, it's fine.
Me and people from Minnesota are allowed to say that. Nobody else is.
So finally, everybody else catches up to this whole situation where Sam is in this abandoned hospital. Daniel bluffs his way in the front door by pretending like he got electrocuted, and Jack and Mayborn come in as well, and they go and save Sam. And of course, like, Jack saves Sam right before she's about to be injected with something that's going to kill her. And she's like, very dramatic, thank you.
That whole exchange, it was like, cute. Are you okay? And she's like, is clearly freaked out. She's fighting for breath, and she's like, very dramatic, thank you. And he's like, he like says something off the cuff.
It's what I do.
It's what I do. And I'm like, this is where you hug.
Right?
And they didn't even do that.
Right?
Why? Because it's a conflict of interest?
I mean, Mayborn wouldn't have said anything. He would have kept it a secret.
Also, like, I'm sorry, but if it's like you almost died, and they've just come to save you, like, a hug of relief,
right,
could be perceived as platonic.
That wouldn't even really... It wouldn't even be a secret that Mayborn would need to keep if he saw it, because if he tried to tell somebody, everybody'd be like, yeah, we know. Like, everybody knows.
But like, just hugging somebody in a moment of recovering from panic, yeah, is not weird.
Yeah.
Showrunners. What happens when you leave men in charge? Yeah. Oh my god.
Go ahead.
I feel like I completely bypassed this point that I wanted to make, which is when what's his name? Adrian, the guy with the uh-huh. who wants the worm.
Yeah.
When he's trying to convince Sam about it. And he's like, the human race progressed to where we are today because of men who broke the rules. I'm like, oh, men who committed war crimes.
Yeah.
That's what you mean.
Yeah.
And I get that he's the villain and therefore incorrect. But like, you're not Nikola Tesla. You're not making the world better. You are doing a war crime. So, sorry.
I mean, I think Mabor made a good point that in theory, giving a symbiote to somebody in the private medical sector could possibly generate cures to various things, you know, if handled sure. responsibly. But this was not handled responsibly or ethically.
But in like a dingy abandoned hospital without the consent of your subject? Like,
yeah.
Mm-mm.
Uh-uh.
Not about that.
Uh-uh. And so Jack leaves Mayborn with some prisoners, but of course Mayborn doesn't stick around. He uses the opportunity to get lost. You know, that's what he does. It's fine. We'll see him again. It's fine. But essentially, so the Gwold gets loose and Jack corners him, but then Jack is shot in the back by Simmons, who is a word I can't say on this podcast, but Sam comes to his rescue and like calls it in to bring him an ambulance. And yeah, you know, she is suddenly very calm. Like, she was freaked out earlier when she was about to be killed, like with some drug, but now she's good. Now that she has a gun and she's like, you know,
she got on a plane.
Yeah, she's doing good. She's watching her man.
You can't see if you're listening to this, but I just made the biggest shitty grin.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just feel like this whole episode is kind of like a prequel to stuff that happens later, which I guess is fine, but yeah, it was definitely not the worst episode. Like, this doesn't even come close to like how bad like Emancipation was, you know what I mean? Like,
all the concubines again. Yeah.
Like, this doesn't even compare. It's not miles even. Better.
That's a problematic episode.
Right. It's
a boring episode.
Yeah, it's just a little slow. So are we ready to move on to the fun one?
Yes!
So this is episode 100. Woo! Extreme.
I need to say, for my own nitpicky reasons, that as much as IMDb says this aired the night after Desperate Measures, Wikipedia says it aired the week after.
But the fandom page also says they're back-to-back, so... I just
wanted to put that out there for posterity. So if somebody from the show is listening and goes, this person had it wrong or that person had it wrong, you go fix it.
Somebody fix it.
Please. Somebody fix it. Somebody deal with that. Thank you.
Yeah, I like Martin. I think he's a fun character, so I was like, yay, Martin.
And I was like, oh, cool, a conspiracy episode. And then... some stuff happened. Oh, like, they're talking about like this thing coming from the JPL, and then the show starts. Uh-huh. And I was like, what is happening? And it was so much fun from there.
Yeah, the whole thing is a show within a show. It's all tongue-in-cheek, making fun of Stargate itself. Most of the people in this fake show called Wormhole Extreme are people that are part of the real Stargate show. Like, there are writers, producers, executives all in these scenes. Oh, and like cute. A lot of the set crew that is part of this fake show is the real set crew. So
I was wondering, because there's a scene like midway through the episode where Jack is confronting Martin about something or other, mm-hmm. and they're talking, and just the lot they're standing in, I'm like, because for those who don't know, I've like worked on film and TV sets before. And the lot they're standing in, I'm like, that just looks like the lot, though.
It is. So
like the crew parking and where the trailers are. I'm like, that doesn't look like they... Because sometimes shows will set up a fake lot to be the behind the scenes. I'm like, that just looks like they didn't dress the lot.
So they have outside shots of Bridge Studios, and that's actually where they film.
Okay. So that
tracks. So it's the real studio set.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
That must have been such a relief for the crew. They're like, we didn't have to pick up the wires this week. If it's there, it's there.
Right. So essentially, our lovable Martin Lloyd has forgotten that he's an alien, but somehow retained the knowledge of the Stargate program. And he has written a TV show called Wormhole Extreme, which is they're currently filming the first season. And in later seasons, we will find out how well this show did on air.
I like how skeptical. I first of all love their faces when they all get to see like
the trailer,
the trailer for the show. But I like the way that Hammond can't resist like laughing. And he's like, well, we'll see how long this is on the air.
Oh, yeah. He just thinks it's hilarious.
Because it's so funny. And he's right. It's great deniability. If anybody's like, oh, there's a program with a wormhole. And they're like, you mean Wormhole Extreme?
Yeah.
It's like great deniability for them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And yeah, so they watch this trailer. And so we have basically a fake Jack, who is Colonel Danning, a fake Sam is Stacy Monroe, fake Daniel is Dr. Levant, and then fake Teal'c is Grell the robot.
And Christopher Judge's face.
Apparently good. They had another take where Chris Judge just burst out in laughter.
Well, because makes me wonder how much of it was like that they had known about this beforehand and how much was just them getting like a live reaction shot of them learning about this.
I'm not sure. I think some of the stuff that was like on the set of Wormhole Extreme, a lot of it was ad lib, like the stuff at the very end where it's like behind the scenes, the
that all felt very ad lib.
Yeah, it's all ad lib. But the guy who plays Grell the robot is Christopher Judge's stand-in for the show.
Oh, that explains a lot.
And the fake Jack Colonel Danning is played by Michael DeLuise, who's another one of the DeLuise brothers. And so there,
I was looking at both him and I guess Peter DeLuise is the director.
Yes,
right. I was like, this director is one of the DeLuises, isn't he? And I'm like, but this actor also kind of looks like him. And then I'm like, they're brothers. Okay,
that makes sense. Peter is both the actual director of this episode and the fake director. And so there are three total sons of Dom DeLuise, and we will also see the third one in a later season. But you won't like his character, so.
Oh, that's okay. The Michael DeLuise is the one who plays the fake Jack.
Yes.
He is giving such Joey Tribbiani the entire time.
Yeah, he really is.
So just. It's so good. It's delightful. The fake, like the trailer for Wormhole Extreme, you know, going this person as that person, and then be like a little clip of the character. When they cut to Daniel's counterpart, Dr. Levant, who's like talking about advocating for alien rights. I'm like, oh, that's how you know it's
No, Daniel does talk about stuff like that.
No, because if it was accurate, he'd be like, well, it is what it is. we'll have to leave them to it.
He flip-flops because he does talk about ethics a lot and like morality. So, yeah.
But they did have him trying to stall on the climax of their mission because he was reading Wall. And I'm like,
yes, I love that so much. Like, he's reading a giant rock. I love
they came through. It's like they know it's ridiculous.
Of course,
like have him talk to the wall,
and the fake Sam being like, why do I never get to kiss anybody,
like and I hate to be mean, but like that bit towards the end when the actual ship is coming down and then the fake Sam's like, what's that, and the fake Teal goes to say something and they just cut him off. I'm like, I hate to say it, but Teal'c doesn't do much unless it's a Teal'c centric episode.
Yep. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't hate to say it. He doesn't talk much.
Yeah. So essentially, the whole plot of this episode is that there is a ship slowly approaching Earth. It'll be here in 3 days. They think it's the ship from Martin's planet. And so they're trying to figure out if Martin knows anything about it. And if those creepy guys who were drugging him before are still drugging him now. And so in the we get all this funny stuff in the meantime. And yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on. There are so many references. And so, like, there is Martin at one point is telling the prop master to paint some kiwis red in order to make them look more alien. And apparently there were red painted kiwis in a previous episode, which now I'm like, man, I gotta go back and watch that episode.
Well, I was thinking, like, aside from the military uniforms that they wear, which are very, like, theatrical, not military at all, very Spirit Halloween, the other costumes and sets look like very early SG-1.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder if it was just recycled.
The green body paint was too green.
Yeah, but like I'm thinking like of the really tall lady that fake Jack has to kiss. Like her dress was right out of season 1.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and there's a comment by some executives getting into a limo of the show needs a sexy female alien, and that's a direct reference to the Anise character, because apparently real executives had said that they needed a sexy alien, and that's like why Anise was brought on, and she always had like boobular tops.
Why do they need to bring in a sexy alien when Teal'c is right there?
Right?
They have a sexy alien every week.
Right?
Just because, like, he doesn't have his boobs out enough, though.
Let him.
You can fix that, SG-1. You can,
right?
Let him take his boobs out.
Yeah.
Anyway, before this goes off the rails,
there are references to Star Trek, to Doctor Who, and there's one guy who is using like a pseudonym of Steve Austin, and I thought that was going to be a reference to Stone Cold Steve
Austin.
That's
what I thought.
But apparently it's a reference to the $6 Million Man, who's also called Steve Austin.
Yeah, no, I thought it was Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so different generations have a different Steve Austin, I guess.
I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen the $6 Million Man.
Nope. I had to look up what it was. I was like, I have no idea what that is.
I know what it is in theory, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, me neither.
Also, it's cute that it only cost him $6 million in healthcare.
I don't know what that means. Is that part of the show?
Well, because, like, he's a $6 million man because, like, something happens to him. So in order to make him, like, the super soldier or bionic whatever, I think it cost them $6 million to do.
Oh.
I think that's why he's called the $6 million man. I could be wrong, but, like, if that's the case, that's really cute that bringing him back from the brink of death only cost $6 million.
Oh, what a low number.
I love capitalism.
And so, let's see, we have a lot of cameos in this episode. We have Robert C. Cooper, who is both a writer and executive producer, appears as a writer on the set of this show.
Is he the writer that they snap at? Like, yes. Why are you here? Go write something?
Yes, that's him. And then there's one point when Teal'c is pretending to be a chef. And
oh, yeah, with the two guys standing there.
These two guys that come up looking for donuts are writer Joseph Malazzi and producer N. John Smith. And then Robert C. Cooper comes up again. The guard in the guardhouse is reading a book about scripts by Robert C. Cooper, which I'm sure is a fake book. But
wait. You know, so.
Martin Wood, who is one of the show's directors, shows up as an NID guy towards the end. And Ronald Wilkerson also appears as an executive's assistant on the set. And then at the very end, when there's two guys in leather jackets with Wormhole Extreme on it, walking away from the camera, one is executive producer Michael Greenberg and the other is show creator Brad Wright. That's so fun. Just like cameo after cameo after cameo. And then, again, there's just so many little Easter eggs, because there's one point when, well, I guess kind of like getting back to the plot a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack comes clean with Martin and tells him that he is an alien and Martin doesn't believe him. And they end up getting, you know, captured by the creepy guys from Martin's planet. Well, when they first get captured by them, Martin is standing in what looks like an unfinished gold hallway set. And that is actually a not yet finished real set that they're going to use in a few episodes.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's just all kinds of little stuff.
I think you could tell how much fun they were having making this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a plot. There's aliens coming to Earth.
Yeah. But
it's so unserious.
Yeah. So, Martin and Jack get captured, but they end up getting free. Teal'c frees them. And the NID get involved because they're also watching the situation because I guess they know about the ship that's coming and they want to, you know, get their hands on it, of course. And so the device, the mobile computing device that controls the ability to get up into the ship is being used as a prop in this show. So they have to go track down this prop. And so then the ship, like, finally comes out of orbit. And luckily the camera crew of the show, like, gets a really nice shot of it that they can use.
Which helps the deniability, I guess.
Yeah.
Although that still seems like a huge security breach.
Right?
Like, all you need is one conspiracy nut job being like, well, that doesn't look fake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anyway. I was thinking that the ship design looked like something that you might see in Star Wars. Like, the way that it like, had two different parts that kind of spun around each other seemed like a very Star Wars concept.
It's like a prequel trilogy thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Except yeah. It just looked like there was like some things that kind of looked like giant tubes coming out of it. That wasn't very Star Wars-y. I think if you took off the giant tubes, the modular aspect. Yeah.
Exactly. Prequel trilogy, High Republic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would not be amiss.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they get a decent shot of it. And Martin's like, we're going to win an Emmy.
He's so happy.
Yeah, he is.
The least realistic thing, speaking as a writer, the least realistic thing was when Jack was reading a bit of the script out loud to Martin.
Uh-huh.
And Martin was like reciting it along with him. Because unless it's a passage I've read 50 times over, and even then, if somebody is reading it to me, I'm not reciting it along with you. I couldn't.
Listen, he doesn't have a lot to do.
That's true. I'm like, I don't have the space in my head.
Right?
When it's out, it's out.
Yeah.
It's not going back in.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jack decides to let the other aliens go back up to their ship and fly it away instead of turning them over to the NID. And so the visual effect showing them being transported is apparently also a nod to Star Trek. So got that in there. And so, yeah, the NID didn't get to arrest anybody. I'm sure they're bummed out. But that's okay. And so, watching the two guys walking with leather jackets, I was like, I want one of those. Where can I get one of those?
Hey, SG-1 crew, if you're listening, and there's extra jackets, then Chelsea one.
I mean, I suppose I could make one. I would just have to find somebody who could make me a patch.
Well, that's easy. But if you have an extra lying around, SG-1 department,
right?
Amazon owns the rights now. So Amazon, you were quite famous for delivering them.
We're getting Funko Pops.
Yeah, well, by the time this comes out, we'll probably have the Funko Pops.
Right? This episode is going to air in like 3 or 4 months from now, so maybe we'll have them.
Finally.
Yeah, so hopefully some other like official merch too would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where in any case, like, are Funko Pops? These are the questions. They all look exactly the same. Like, there's no visual interest there. And I know that's why you don't get it.
I'm like, wouldn't they just all be in scrubs? It's a little
boring. Yeah, they would all be in scrubs or lab coats. There's nothing visually interesting about an ER Funko Pop.
That's probably why they don't exist.
Yeah.
So after, like, the kind of sort of official end of the episode, then we get, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, which is all of the actors just goofing off, basically. And so we have the scene of the fake Daniel getting pummeled by fake rocks, which was really funny.
Wasn't that fake Jack?
No, it was Daniel.
Because his head got stuck under it. Wasn't that Jack? And then he got up all pissed and he told the director to get in there.
I'm pretty sure that was the fake Daniel.
I think that was the fake Jack.
I'll have to go back and watch, I guess. Because I thought he was wearing glasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like when fake Daniel is like,
he's like, I'm Christopher Boucher playing Raymond Gunn, playing Dr. Levant, who is a parody of Daniel Jackson, played by Michael Shanks, who was originally played by James Spader.
Like, yes, getting my James Spader Daniel in here. Let's go. Just like the levels of that was so funny. And I was kind of expecting everybody to do that. I'm like, it wouldn't be funny if everybody did it.
No. Oh, man. Yeah, it's like, yeah, playing a character on character is pretty fun. I also recognized one of the NID officers as a guy from Dark Angel in one episode. I just keep seeing these guys pop up. Is there any other references that I missed?
I do like the little argument that fake Jack has with the director.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, none of it's real. Well, if none of it's real, then why are we here? Is the money real?
Yeah, you can tell they're brothers.
Yeah, like it was just such a like a good dynamic that you really can't fake.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that,
and I loved like Peter DeLuise's whole thing of asking for bigger explosions throughout the episode. Bigger.
When the this is Michael DeLuise, but when the ship was coming down and fake Daniel, fake Sam, and fake Teal'c are looking at it, and they're like, whoa, and they're like, pan up. He's like, I'm supposed to be in all the cool scenes.
Okay. Oh, I loved this scene where fake Sam comes up to Peter DeLuise and Martin and is like, if I'm out of phase and I can walk through the walls, how come I don't fall through the floor? And they're just like,
That's a valid question.
It's a valid question. We're not sure how to answer that. What do you think about Martin as a screenwriter?
Well, I think his idea of calling the series Going to Different Planets was terrible.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'm glad you got somebody else writing, because...
I mean, yeah, arguably he's not a great writer because... this isn't actually an original idea.
No. I mean, there's no such thing as an original idea. Not anymore.
But it's clearly based on...
like, yeah, like stuff. You can take an existing concept and do something original with it or something creative with it.
Yeah.
But he's not a very good writer.
No.
But because he is a white man, he showed up with an idea and got a show off the ground immediately, and apparently by the sound of it, it's very successful. So this all track.
We'll find out later how successful it is.
Well, it still tracks.
Yeah. Oh, one thing that I thought was weird was that when Jack goes to the guardhouse and he asks to see all of the license plates of people coming in and out, and he's just like, here's an email. Email me a complete list of all these license plates. And I'm like, would that not require like a warrant of some kind?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems odd.
And invasive.
Yeah. Just because you're military doesn't mean that you can just ask for that information.
Not that that's going to stop him.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, I did really like how the fake Teal'c, fake actor portraying fake Teal'c was unable to raise a single eyebrow. And so they were like eyebrow training him. I don't see. That was great.
Oh, I can do it. Okay. I'm like trying. Can you?
I feel like I can only do it with one.
Yeah, I can't do it on my left side. Well, I can, but my face don't look right.
I feel like if I think about it too much, it gets harder.
I can do it much easier on my right side than my left. It's like doing the live long and prosper thing. It comes easier to one hand than the other, although now I can do it on both.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently I'm not very good at winking because I think one time I winked at somebody and they're like, that wasn't very good.
rude.
Yeah, apparently when I wink, the other eye also partially closes, so I'm not a very good winker.
Oh, maybe it's what side you're doing it with, because my right eye goes just fine. My left eye, my right eye also wants to go. Yeah. So basically what I'm saying is I have no muscle control on the left side of my face. Like everything I can do on the right side, I just can't on my left.
That's fine.
I blame the doctor that brought me into this world. It's his fault.
Okay. Why?
Because he bruised me with the forceps.
Rude.
Doctor's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's my fault because I made it difficult. But that's a story for another time.
You're just causing drama right out of the womb.
Yeah, I was like on my way to be born. I was like, actually, I don't like pain. So I just kind of stopped.
Stopped coming out?
On route. And they were like, all right, got to yank her out. And then they bruised my face.
Great.
Fun fact.
Well, you know, I'm lazy by nature because I was 10 days late and my mom had an appointment to be induced and then she just naturally went into labor like an hour before the appointment.
I was a week early. which is very reflective of who I am as a person. I'm like yes. very early, but then like in the moment I was like, actually, I hate change. Yeah.
That is very you.
Yeah.
That is extremely your personality.
I have changed my mind. I don't want to be born.
Oh, man.
Anyway, all this to say, it's my doctor, my mom's doctor's fault that I can't raise my left eyebrow.
Sure.
Why without not? Without the right. I can raise it, but just not independently.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. He's not here to defend himself. Whatever.
I'll fight him. I don't care.
So you have anything else you want to mention about these episodes?
Nope.
I was wondering, the John DeLancey guy, I know he plays the character Q?
Yeah.
Is that like a good guy or a bad guy? Usual guy? Well,
he annoys the hell out of me.
Okay.
So I'm inclined to say a bad guy. He's not a villain. Uh-huh. He usually will show up at a really inconvenient time to mess with Captain Picard. Okay. And like bring some sort of moral quandary into things and sure. inconvenience everybody.
Okay. So he's annoying.
He's so annoying. Like if well, it was a also Q episode, I would show. Be sitting there going, if I wasn't determined to watch this whole show, I would skip this. Like
I feel like he brings the same energy to Stargate then. He's very annoying.
He's much less chaotic. Like he's more mm-hmm. cartoon villain in Stargate, where Star Trek, yeah. it's like, oh my god, shut up.
Okay, yeah. I can see that. Yeah. Well, thank you for informing me. Maybe one day I'll watch Star Trek.
You no. should.
Honestly, it's they a shock not that I haven't.
Behind on Star Trek, but I am.
Well, like, I mean, my parents are Trekkie. Well, can you call somebody a Trekkie if they're not, like, because my parents are like have watched all Star Trek stuff, but they're not like super fans. You know what I mean? For
fans, I would say yes.
Because I guess there's different levels of fandom. I would say that they're more casual fans. Because I mean, they've seen everything, but like that's the extent. Like they don't have engage merch. With it. Yeah, they don't look up stuff on. They don't go to cons. They don't have merch. They don't like.
But do they do that for anything they're fans of?
No. I mean, they're boomers, so they don't really get involved in fandom stuff. I feel like that's fandom stuff is usually more starting with Gen X.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think these episodes hold up for modern audience okay.
Yeah.
All right, so next week we will be discussing SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 13 and 14. Proving Ground and 48 Hours. Arzu, are you ready for your next quote?
Yes.
So all this time we've been saving the world, we've really only been saving the good old US of A.
Okay, this feels like a trick. Because this sounds like Jack. But that sounds too easy. I'm still going to go with Jack. Hammond's just briefed them on something. about how the implications of whatever they've been doing are not as widespread as they thought. That prompts this line. My backup choice would be Daniel, but no. Sam. Daniel's not the sarcastic. Sam is my backup choice, but Jack is my first choice.
Okay. Well, we'll find out next time. That's it for today. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can currently find us on our podcast Twitter page at Wormhole Waffles, possibly Tumblr, possibly Blue Sky or Hive, who knows. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Arzu Amin. I'm at arzuamin.bluesky.social on Blue Sky. I need to remember to use it. Maybe by the time this airs, I'm already.
Maybe we'll get better at social media by the time this airs.
Honestly, I would just cross-post across platforms, but I think it's going to annoy people, so I just don't do that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start, I swear. I'm at arzud2 on Instagram and Threads and Tumblr, which I don't really use, but I do have it. As a network, we are on Twitter at geeky_waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We are The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. We are at thegeekywaffle.com. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekywaffle.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.